Chapter 6, And How. Beginnings are usually scary and endings are usually sad, but it's everything in between that makes it all worth living. Bob Marley. Once you decide to start your business, you need to accomplish a few simple things. Well, simple may be a bit misleading, but they'll seem simple after it's done. These steps may feel overwhelming, but just remember they're not that big of a deal. While it's true that only about 10% of all businesses make it to 5 years, most of them make it past day one. Find a name. I would not recommend using your name in your business. Let's lay the reasons out here. Google Mike's Plumbing online. How many do you see? Now pretend you're a customer of Mike's and you need to find a phone number for Mike. Or make a complaint. Or pay a bill. A confused customer rarely buys. Have you ever had anyone mispronounce your last name? If they mispronounce your last name, what are the chances that they'll spell your last name correctly? Imagine a potential client trying to find you on the internet, but failing to because they spell your name wrong. Suppose I want to find a plumber. On a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being terribly unprofessional and 5 being a shining example of professional, how professional is Mike's Plumbing versus Leak-Free Plumbing? Suppose I want to sell my plumbing business to a guy not named Mike. Suppose I want to expand my business to another region. This region happens to have a guy named Mike. This Mike also does plumbing. Suppose I want to give people confidence in my name. Suppose I want to be memorable. Suppose I want to be easy to find online. Suppose another Mike, who also happens to be a plumber, is not paying his bills. I wanted a global company, so I chose a global name, Jack Ma. The list goes on and on. Don't get me wrong, plenty of successful businesses have used their own names. Ford, Chevrolet, Budweiser, and Dell are doing fine. They also have a ton of cash to throw at advertising to get some name recognition. You want to name your company for your clients, not necessarily for you. You want to name your company for how people will find you, pay you, refer you, and remember you. Can you imagine starting a car company called Chevrolet with only a few hundred bucks to spend on advertising? You better make an awesome car with a name like that. Not only is a good name catchy and memorable, it should help people understand what your business does. If your name reflects your products or services, you'll have a much better chance being found via Google search. So it's important to choose wisely. Lori Greiner. Create a business entity. Putting aside the whole corporations are people, political arguments, you want to create your own business entity. This is for your financial protection as well as for other matters relating to selling or handing off your business. You'll be starting either an LLC, an S corporation, or a C corporation. I don't delve too deep into the differences here. Hundreds of other books touch on what to do in that regard. If your state makes it easy, I'd say grab an LLC for now and figure out what you really need to be later, after you're all set to open your doors. Many states allow you to form an LLC for only a couple hundred bucks in about 10 minutes online. With an LLC, you can start the process of building a border between you and your business. You want your business to play in its own sandbox, so you can play in your own sandbox. That way, if someone trips in your company's sandbox, they'll go after your company and not you. If you need more help, consult a trusted attorney. Lessons learned. Keep your sandboxes separate. To avoid getting your personal life mixed in with your business life from a liability point of view, it's best for you to create a legal entity for your business. As with most things in the legal world, thinking things are separate and actually documenting them as separate are two distinct things. Treat your business like a piece of real estate. Without a deed showing who owns it or that it even exists, it probably does not exist. Or if it's proven to exist, you do not own it. Unless you are liable, then you're totally the only owner. So how do you keep your sandboxes separate? You need a separate checking account, savings account, credit card, loan, if needed, for your business. If you fail to do that and someone happens to trip on your sandbox, you're at risk of what lawyers call piercing the veil. That's lawyer speak for having to pry your wallet open to pay for damages claimed by some clumsy sandbox walker. Build a professional team. Lawyer. Find an experienced, smart, easy to talk to, relatively affordable business lawyer. I have some rules for finding the right lawyers. I need to trust them, and they must be well known in the community. That way, if they mess up, their reputation is at stake. I need them to bill fairly and to have a live human answer their phone to help with things like scheduling. I don't need to pay $500 an hour for a lawyer to navigate their calendar around their kids' soccer games. I need the lawyer to be able to talk with me quickly, confidently, and intelligently about any legal issues I may face. Lastly, I need concrete answers. I've run into many lawyers who give wishy-washy responses. When I ask a question, they talk circles around the issue and fail to give an answer. In law, you typically need a concrete answer because you need to make a concrete decision or take a concrete action. Accountant. I tried to do my taxes once on my own. I thought, how hard can it really be? I sat down, I made it past my name and number, and started collecting paperwork. Then I hired an accountant. I happily paid them and went about my business. You may be different and you may do your taxes on your own just fine, but I don't recommend it. You want a professional to protect you from yourself. Taxes and liabilities are often gray and murky areas. How you interpret some tax code may or may not be in alignment with how the IRS interprets it. If you ever get audited, you'll want an accountant who can assist you in solving the issue. Going to an accountant after you have a mess and a headache is not advised. Banker or credit unioner. You need a good relationship with a banker, or more specifically, a commercial lender. Sooner or later, you'll need money. Maybe you'll be able to float your business for a time, but at some point, you're going to need a line of credit or some cash to buy a building or help you grow in some other manner. Money is a tool, and banks and credit unions can provide access to that tool. I will warn you that many bankers come and go. They hop from bank to bank, and you'll watch as your relationship fizzles to nothing with each career move your banker makes. So the relationship is often with the institution rather than specific bankers. Just keep networking and get to know the commercial bankers who are movers and shakers in your area. Team of advisors. This is a fancy way of saying smart people to ask questions. Maybe your friend down the road has a business. Maybe you find people who you can bounce ideas off through networking. Maybe you hire a business coach, like draw in customers. However you do it, get a team of advisors you can trust. It also doesn't hurt to have a team that's open to seeking support on their own issues with you. All small businesses come across similar issues. Also, give each of your advisors a copy of this book, because bold business. Lessons learned. You are only as good as your team. I paid for an attorney to help me with a partnership agreement that came with a hefty price tag. I received an agreement that was so cookie cutter that it still had the attorney's previous client company's name throughout the document. This attorney sold me a used document. Can you imagine this carelessness in a court battle? Welcome to Loophole Technicality City, population you. After you get your business rolling, you should know about the next levels. This is the ladder you are considering advancing up. The levels range from owning a job to essentially ruling the world. Please do not be afraid to rule the world. I'm certain you would do a fine job of it. Levels of being an entrepreneur. 1. Self-employed. You are the job owner. 2. Manager. You plus employees. 3. Owner. Profitable business that works without you. The difference between these levels comes down to how much the company needs you and how much the company works for you. For example, if you are self-employed, don't have employees, and you get hit by a bus, you have a problem. The bus took your left leg, a few weeks of recovery time, and your business. All in one fell, I forgot to look left swoop. This is level 1, self-employed. As a self-employed business owner, you are essentially the business. If you went away, even for a day, the business would not exist. You have no one answering your calls, responding to emails, or performing any work that nets you any income. If you were hit by this bus, your business would go away with little to no fanfare. Suppose this bus hits you when you are the owner of a business that works without you. That same bus will still hurt you and take some recovery time, and maybe your leg. But your business will keep humming along and continue to provide you with income. Outside of hating buses, what would your stress level be in the first scenario? How about the second scenario? Now suppose you end up in the middle. You have employees that rely on you, and the business needs you, and the bus comes along and pow! With a small business that is run by a manager, you have your people and processes running the business. This is level 2, manager. Often, your business is able to run without you, at least for a little while. You can go on vacation or meet with clients for a few days, and the business doesn't skip a beat. You may have a stack of messages to return and paperwork to finish. If you are hit by a bus, your business would likely survive, presuming your employees stepped up. This last bit is based purely on your employee knowledge, engagement, and your previous trust in them. What happens to your employees' livelihoods in either case? If you don't care about your employees, set this book down and slap yourself. Your employees are the lifeblood of your business. They trust you to provide for them as long as they perform the tasks you hired them to do. They've kept up their end of the bargain. Your failure to yield should not cause them the need to start looking for a job. So from a street crossing perspective, and just about every other metric, it is best to be a business owner. Of course, a business cannot typically skip the preceding levels. Most business owners end up at levels 1 or 2 and dream of level 3 for at least a little while. In an ideal world, you should do all you can to get to level 3. This is business nirvana for yourself, your family, your employees, as well as your clients, vendors, and the eventual sale of your company. Many companies that are valued in the billions have a CEO or founder that is essentially still a manager. If they leave, the business may not go away, though it may suffer a loss. Not every business is meant to create a passive income for you, but it wouldn't hurt. When you're a true business owner, you're not needed, as in ever. You make your money off of other people's work because you built up a business that allows you to not need to contribute. That does not mean that you do not need to contribute. What it means is that if you were hit by a bus, there would probably be a fancy funeral, but most people would leave early because your business needs to keep rolling. Does this mean that if you're self-employed that you are going to have some problems? Well, yes. But everybody has problems. Your problems may be limited in scope until you need to bring in new clients or be 5 places at once. Some self-employed small business owners are just fine being the one-person business. I'm certainly not suggesting that there's anything wrong with this, but I am suggesting it is limited in boldness. Owning a job is not ideal from my point of view. Owned jobs are good for consultants, though most good consultants have other income outside of their consulting business. This allows the consultant to do as he or she sees fit when he or she wants to. Level 2 manager as a business owner is actually very common. This has its pros since you're bringing in multipliers, typically employees or subcontractors, but it also has the con of creating the necessity to support your employee base. Employees typically get paid regardless of how busy a business is. But that in itself is a very small con, wouldn't you say? Employees are your company on many levels. Having employees is moving you away from trading time for money. Any business plan won't survive its first encounter with reality. The reality will always be different. It will never be the plan. Jeff Bezos. Do you need a business plan? The short answer is yes. The real answer is yes, but not for all the reasons you think. Venturing off on your own and starting a business takes a lot of time, effort, and money. It also involves risk. A business plan helps you realize roughly what you are getting into and if it's truly worth the risk. A business plan is like math homework. It may be tough to do while you're doing it, but once you have spent time on all those story problems, you're a smarter person who is more productive without even realizing how awesome you are. The real challenge comes where that metaphor stops. Story problems have a definitive answer. 1 + 1 = 2, every time. Business plans ask you where you expect your business to be in 3 to 5 years. How are you supposed to know? You were given a best guess. This part of the business plan is tough because no one knows what the future may bring. Not exactly, anyways. A business plan will touch on your initial investment and what you will sell and to whom. The actual customers you get and the problems you face rarely make it into a business plan. I have rarely seen a business plan that includes a part for things that can go wrong. Though that may be the most practical business plan ever written. Preparation breeds trust. You want a business plan because people who loan you money will want to know that you have a plan. It is much easier to ask for money if you have a dedicated document that states exactly what you are going to do and how you are going to do it. Otherwise, you are asking people to trust you on your smile alone. How much money will people give you for undocumented potential? I haven't considered the results of my actions other than I'm certain my business will succeed. Can I please have $50,000? On the other hand, business plans can be a huge waste of time. Have you ever traded stocks? Have you ever read the speculations from the experts on what stocks to buy and sell? These experts are wrong as often as they are right. Many of them are very well paid to be as accurate as the local weather forecaster. If the stock people and the weather people can't tell what the future will bring, how can anyone expect you to tell what the future will bring? The marketing portion of your business plan is mildly entertaining as well. How much will you spend on marketing and where will you spend this money? How many clients will that bring in? I challenge you to find anyone who is able to predict with complete accuracy and consistency what marketing did for their business without direct hindsight. Business plans are made to appease certain people. Sometimes those people are you and your crew. Sometimes those people are loaning you money. You just need to figure out who you need to keep happy. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. Mike Tyson. My advice is to use your best judgment for your business plan speculation, get the minimum plan needed for your peace of mind and your business needs, and sell as much as you possibly can. Your time is much better spent preparing and selling rather than speculating about what you will prepare and sell. So, to answer the question, do I need a business plan? The answer is yes. But what you really should be asking is, how in-depth should the business plan be? Put together a true multi-page tome of a business plan if you need to borrow money. If you do not need to borrow money to start your business, do a simple plan. A one-page plan similar to the business model canvas. Search business model canvas in Google Images to get a sample. On the other hand, you may want a bigger business plan just to help you grow as an entrepreneur. Just be sure to add a portion about things that can go wrong for your own personal plan. It's probably best to keep that bit out of the document you give to the bank. Most importantly with any plan is to work out the financial portion. How many of what you need to sell in a given time frame to be successful? How much will those items cost you to make, deliver, and market? Set your business plan to win. Raise the bar or you're not going to be prepared. You need to think that what you're doing will make you $100 million. Swizz Beatz. As a side note, business plans are very entertaining to read about 3 to 5 years after you've written them. You see what dreams you had and the nightmares you didn't expect. Maybe you will find yourself in a completely different place. I have yet to meet a business that stuck to the original business plan to the letter. Looking back on how far you have come is great to do every once in a while. Looking back at where you thought you would be is often even more fun. For that reason alone, your business plan may be worth writing. I teach a business planning class and routinely see students change their entire business after putting pen to paper, or fingers to keyboard, and discovering that they can't or won't do what they thought they could. The beauty of the plan is the planning itself. Lessons learned. Planning is step one. One of the most challenging aspects of planning is knowing when to stop, or at least starting to take action amidst your planning. A plan is often never truly done. You must take action on your plan for anything truly useful to happen. Are you sure? It's not for everyone. One of the things I want to make clear in this bold business book is that entrepreneurship is not for everyone. Much like any activity that requires dedication, persistence, and drive to achieve, some people just aren't cut out for starting or running a business. In the books Talent is Overrated and The Talent Code, Jeff Colvin and Daniel Coyle, respectively, decode the mystery of how people get good at being great. Debunking the notion that people are born with greatness, they describe how talent as we know it is truly just success that follows roughly 10,000 hours of practice and hard work. Most people are not willing to do much for 10,000 hours, aside from watching TV. Unfortunately for couch potatoes everywhere, TV watching does not pay that well. Why start out with a business partner instead of going it alone? By Mason Tikkanen, Modus Financial, moduscc.com. The grass is always greener. I think it's fair to say that most people who start businesses by themselves periodically wish they had a business partner to bounce ideas off of, hear differing perspectives, or even just to simply have someone else to talk to. It's also fair to say that most people who start businesses with one or more partners occasionally wish they could just make decisions more quickly, their way, and with fewer approvals necessary to move forward. But both approaches are equally as valuable as frustrating. My business partner and I were fortunate enough to start our business having already worked together for over a decade. We had the advantage of being familiar with each other's communication style and work ethic, decision-making approach, and client service philosophy. This was a huge advantage that not every partnership has when starting out. Why, oh why, didn't I take the blue pill? Most people don't choose to leave a comfortable salary, vacation time, benefits, and stability to have that all disappear the next day. I've seen someone compare entrepreneurship to jumping off a cliff and trying to build your airplane before you hit the ground. You'd have to be a lunatic, right? But sometimes you don't recognize the place you're leaving behind. Sometimes the direction they're heading in no longer resonates with who you want to be. We decided to start our firm in order to take our skills and attempt to help as many businesses as possible in the way we felt was most fair for all parties. We felt we had the necessary expertise and vision to fill a growing gap our industry was creating. We felt we could also find a way to support our families and future employees by filling that gap. That's why we decided to start our business. This is to say that starting a business is tough. You will need some insane persistence. You'll have people tell you why it won't work. They'll kick and grab to prevent you from reaching success. You'll have to power through all of this. That's one of the reasons business owners are so prideful. If you had any idea what they had to tolerate and sacrifice to get the success they have, you would understand. Like the basketball player that makes the winning three-point shot, success may only be evident to others for mere seconds, but it took years to perfect. Sweat and toil are the name of the game in sports, business, and just about any other success that is worth achieving. My point is that this maybe isn't for you. If it isn't, you will know it. How? Simple. We need to weed out those who won't be willing to tolerate the challenges of business. If you can't tolerate a little challenge in a book, what happens when your mom challenges you about your business? Many people start a business only to make money. Just to make money is not a strong enough mission. Robert Kiyosaki. Do the math. I recently taught a class on what it takes to start a business. I talked with some of the students about their business ideas and started doing some math. One woman wanted to make candles, so we went through what it would cost to make them, and what she could charge for them, and how many candles she could make in the time she was willing to work. Then we added in time for selling, dealing with customers, and all the gritty details that come up when you're selling something you manufacture. Her tone went from giddy to a little concerned to throwing her hands up and claiming that maybe it wasn't for her. Realistically, she could get her business to work, but the thought of working more than 20 hours per week and every weekend in the summer at craft fairs dragged her down. Her spirit was broken in a matter of minutes. And you'll need the drive to overcome challenges like these. You need the determination to stand up for what you believe is the right business for you and say, "How can we make this work?" Then you are one step closer to getting your business rolling. That's not to say that you should start a business that is clearly not economically viable. Maybe this candle thing wouldn't work for her. Maybe she needs to find a different product or a twist on her initial product, or change how she sells them. Whatever the case, starting a business is where the drive needs to be. The passion for your specific product or service should not prevent you from altering your business model to make certain your business can be successful. This should not be an all-or-nothing affair. Can you imagine a potential entrepreneur all fired up to start a typewriter repair company? This guy could be the best damn typewriter repair technician in the world. He just has a very limited market. An uphill battle is imminent. I would recommend picking your first business to be one of the slightly shallower slope. Get a business rolling that can sustain you while you chase other dreams or offer you the time to find other dreams to chase. How many successful businesses do you see around that are needed, but unlikely to have been someone's dream? I see dry cleaners that seem to be doing very well. If it's your dream to start a dry cleaning business, fire away. I just doubt it's a popular dream. When I see a dry cleaner's shop, I presume that the entrepreneur saw a need, had some skills, and got that dry cleaning business rolling. For some business owners, what business they start doesn't really matter. Their reasons for being an entrepreneur can often be supported by non-glamorous businesses. Through all of this, you need to identify your passion. Is it owning a business or owning a specific business? Most small business owners eventually do not care what it is they are selling. Sure, they want to make the world a better place and make some money doing it. The drive, however, actually rests in creating a successful business, not necessarily a successful business that fits another passion of theirs. I started a printer repair business as my first true entrepreneurial adventure. Printer repair wasn't my passion. I was simply good at it. People loved me for my skills. After a few years of dealing with the business portion of fixing printers, I started to get the 7-year itch. My passion was in owning a business, not in fixing printers. It was great, though, because this led to innovation. I created another business to feed my entrepreneurial spirit. The business I started, Calls on Call, was not even an idea when I had started my printer repair business. If I had a passion for fixing printers, I would have stayed with it. But my passion for printers left the day I sold my printer repair company, or arguably a few days or years before. Sure, you need to have passion for what you do. You need to do what you do with a drive and confidence to thrive and survive. It is okay for the drive and confidence in your specific business to be shallow, if your drive and confidence run deep in having a successful business as a whole. The downside of having passion for your specific business instead of a passion for business in general is that you may try to keep sinking ships afloat, even if it's best that they just sink. You may lower prices to keep market share or try to appease customers that are unable to be satisfied. You will destroy your business from the inside out if you don't let it evolve. Did you know that 3M started out by selling the mineral corundum to manufacturers of grinding wheels? It was not until later that they started focusing on innovative new products. The evolution of a business is necessary in any business you may start. Innovation cannot happen when you are focused on keeping what you have. Butterflies cannot exist without first being caterpillars. Here's a simple checklist for starting your business. It's not meant to be exhaustive, but it'll get you started. Check it out. The 1-month checklist, in no particular order. Create a name for your business. Make it memorable and have it explain what you do. Clever is good, clear is better. Keep search engine optimization, SEO, in mind with your company name as well. Utilize the web to make sure your company will not be confused with other companies. Get a website domain name. Get a logo from your graphic designer friend, from Fiverr.com, or some other source. I would avoid clip art, though it may work as a placeholder if you need one. Create a separate business entity such as an LLC or S corporation. I like to start with an LLC. You can always change later. In many states, they are brutally simple to obtain. You can often find your state's Department of Financial Institutions website and create your business entity for less than a couple hundred dollars. Typically, you do not need to work with a lawyer for something this simple, though you certainly can. Some websites claim to create an LLC for you for a lot of cash. They are unnecessary to use. Start with your state's website. Use your company name without the LLC as Doing Business As in all of your public marketing to make changing it to a corporation later easier. Create a website. Get an email address. Something at yourwebsite.com is preferred. No at Gmail, at Hotmail, at AOL, etc. Get a business-specific phone number. Cell phone, Google Voice number, anything will do. Just make it different than your personal number. Get an EIN number, Employee Identification Number. This is like the social security number for your business. No lawyer needed, just a simple online form from the federal government. Create a state tax ID number. No lawyer needed, typically just a simple online form found on your state's Department of Revenue website. Get a savings and checking account for your business in the business's name. Get business cards. The more professional looking, the better. Create a written partnership agreement, if in a partnership. You can find basic ones online. This should cover all of the if-then scenarios, such as if one of you wants out, then this is how you get out, and what money, if any, changes hands. Keep in mind this is easy now. When your business involves 40 people and has revenues in the millions of dollars, things can get hairy. Make sure this agreement covers future growth. It should also cover divorce, death, disability, and inability to perform from either party. Basically, you get this document put together now so that you have the ground rules to play nice and fair together later. Sit down and talk with your significant other. Get their feedback. Let them know this is important to you. You need their excitement, advice, and help. You can do without, but running a business isn't easy on relationships. Ask me how I know. Create a business plan. It does not have to be an 80-page dissertation. Just a simple layout of what you will do and how you'll make money doing it. Get your social media buzzing. Set up YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, etc. Content can come later. You just need the channels in place, ready for content. Marketing and innovation produce results. All the rest are costs. Peter Drucker. Talk money. Who puts in what and when and who has control over the money? Add this to your operating agreement. May or may not be a separate document. Also, discuss pricing for your services and your products. Celebrate your creation. Seriously, go out to dinner with your family and take a couple hours to bask in what you have done. Then, get back to work. Hire your people. If you need employees, the time to find them is before you actually need them. Good people can be hard to find. All this combined should only take a few days full-time or a couple weeks if you pick at it a few tasks at a time. If at any point you are feeling jittery or like it's not a good move, verify your commitment now. What is challenging you? Nobody wants to hear, "I never really wanted to do this," after a business is heading south. You need to be fully committed. Commitment will make you successful, because with that commitment, you will take action. Actions get results. No action, no results. Understand that, in business, your unnecessary empathy may slow you down. Just like Tom Hanks said in A League of Their Own, "There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in business." Be prepared for that. Want to print this checklist? Visit drawincustomers.com/startup. The 6-month plan, in no particular order. Get what you sell ready to sell. You can get that stuff going now. This part will take some time and may never truly be finished. As in any career, you will keep refining and polishing and adding and subtracting, and well, you get the point. Trademark if needed. Get a place to do your work, make your product, and or sell and distribute your stuff. Tell your world. Tell everyone. Friends, family, coworkers, acquaintances, the mail person, the checkout clerk. Everyone you come into contact with should be told about your venture. You do not know who knows who. The main lead generators could come from your plumber. Don't fall too deep in love with your business. If you realize it's not a viable business, you must be prepared to walk away and start something new. Remember the Snuggle House? Or typewriter repair? Or the Yellow Pages? At some point, you may realize that things did not go as well as planned. Hopefully not, but be prepared to pivot. Define your goals, including a timeline. Where do you want to be in 1 year? 3 years? What is your exit strategy? Get systems in place for smooth operations. Start selling. Find your market and hit it. Sell, sell, sell. Get a mentor, coach, accountability partner, or sounding board. Someone or a group of people you trust to help guide you to where you need or want to be. Draw-In Customers Business Coaching is available, as well as many others. Celebrate your creation. Seriously, go out to dinner with your family and take a couple hours to bask in what you have done. Again, then get back to work. Enjoy the ride. Bye, city. Buying an orthodontic practice was an experience filled with excitement, stress, and beyond everything else, uncertainty. Many start their own business from scratch, and there are benefits to this option. You select your staff. You buy the equipment you want. You design the practice with your vision. But there are many benefits to buying an established business. How about cash flow? The comfort that comes with knowing that you will instantly have the income to pay back your loans rather than needing to sell platelets until your business takes off is one of the most important perks. The skeleton of the business is already in place, and although you may need to incorporate new protocols or restructure or hire and fire some staff, there's much less personal time invested into getting the business off the ground. It is hard to change the mindset of the staff, or I find much of my cash flow goes into updating the practice. Still, the pros have outweighed the cons. The following are some tips to make the transition process more efficient. If the seller truly wants to sell, she or he will have a valuation performed. This is typically conducted by an accountant or a business transition specialty group. There are multiple methods for coming up with a value for the business, including capitalization of cash flow method, the market approach, the asset approach, the income approach, and many more. Research which method is best for your particular business. Hire an accountant or a business transition specialty group to review the valuation. Ask the accountant or specialty groups for references and contact those references. Get help and be willing to pay for it. Make sure they are good advocates for you. Visit networking groups months before you buy a business. Since you will need the assistance of multiple professionals, including a lawyer, an accountant, a financial consultant, and a commercial lender, use networking meetings as an opportunity to informally interview people. Make sure the professionals have experience with your specific type of business transition. When buying a business, you will have a checklist of over 100 things to do. Find the right people to help you, and they will communicate with each other and take care of the majority of the checklist for you. Set a timeline for the transition and a maximum amount you are willing to pay. If the seller seems to be wheeling and dealing or dragging their feet, walk away. Either they are not truly interested in selling the practice, or if they are, they will return to you on your terms. Remember, money can often bring out the worst in people. This does not mean the seller is a bad person. This does not mean you are a bad person. But in a business transaction where hundreds of thousands of dollars may be on the line, you become your biggest advocate, and it may get ugly. Try to detach from your feelings and think logically. Play chess before you go into the negotiations. Think through as many scenarios as you can and have a plan of action for each. Buying a business is an adoption. The seller is handing you their baby, and you are getting everything you always wanted, but have no idea what to do with it. Just remember, you will learn, adapt, grow, and above all, mold that practice into your dream, your baby. And one day, you will share that baby with someone else. Enjoy the ride.